Hi, this is Jeff from the FASD Success Show. Today, we have a third-time guest. She just so happens to be the executive director for the Canada FASD Research Network. Today, we're talking to Audrey McFarland. We're talking about everything FASD, and from FASD Day to research to what is going on in one of the best FASD organizations on the planet. So, find your favorite hiding place, grab your shoes, grab a snack. Let's get after it.
Welcome to the FASD Success Show, the only podcast where you can get real-world information about fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. This show will help you create calm in the chaos, have hope for the future, and more importantly, save your sanity so you don't lose your flipping mind. Now, here's your host, caregiver turned world FASD educator, Jeff Noble.
Yes, y'all. Welcome to episode 121 of the FASD Success Show. I'm your host, Jeff Noble. Thank you so much for being here. You're freaking awesome. I know how busy your life is, and so the fact that you spend some time with me every week, it really means a lot. So whether this is your first episode, if it is your first episode, welcome. Or if it's your 121st episode, again, thank you so much. As the listening audience is growing, the feedback is growing, I think everything is growing in a good, positive way. And if you want to keep helping us grow, and you've listened to a few shows and you're like, all right, he's gained my trust for that valued, coveted spot in your podcast rotation. And if you haven't, by all means, and you like what we're doing, please subscribe to the show. You can follow us. It helps you because as soon as we drop a brand new episode, you will receive said episode however you listen to podcasts. And it helps us because it tells the algorithms, the nerds in the back, as I like to say, that our show is relevant. And today we have the most relevant guest. We're talking about the most relevant topic. We are talking to Audrey McFarland, who is the executive director of CanFASD, because as you know, my show is FASD Success. It's all about creating success for everybody in the world of FASD. Although the audience is geared more towards the caregiver, right? Because that's been my experience. But I know all types of people listen to the show. So I'm excited to have Audrey on. This is her third time on the show. I think it's important almost to do an annual address. If you are not aware, to know that I absolutely love the Canada FASD Research Network. I sit on their ambassador committee. I had been using their stuff, their material, which I thought was the best. And it still is the best. The good news is there's other organizations that are also doing some really good work. But I think when it just comes to understanding FASD, listening to the population, doing relevant research, and the researchers are just human beings who just happen to be brilliant, but they're also super down-to-earth people. And you would have heard me on the show with them multiple times because I want to know what's new. And then when I know what's new, I want to bring it to you because it just adds another weapon, another tool to your tool belt when raising an individual with FASD, or if you're an individual on the spectrum, to also get some tools and to learn maybe why or how your brain and body interact with the environment. And I do get those messages too, so I think that's excellent that we're just talking about it. Cool. We're going to jump right into the interview. All is well over on this side. I know as we creep closer to school, don't forget we do have a school guide, a school package, which has been downloaded over 2,000 times and has really been shared all over the world. So thank you for that. You can go to our blog at fasdsuccess.com/podcast and click on episode 121. And at the bottom, we'll have all of the information as well as the information and the resources listed from CanFASD, because they're stepping up their game. Like, they are getting better, as Audrey says. They're getting better at taking the work that's been done and synchronizing it and curating it so normies like me can absolutely 1,000% understand it. Okay, last point, and then we're getting out of here, okay? So I appreciate you listening to me at the start of this. If you have not heard, or you might have heard, like, our podcast is getting big enough where we are now having people asking to do ads, and the opportunity to do ads. So you'll notice I'm going to try it for a month, okay? I'm going to try it for a month. If you freaking hate it, just email me, jeff@fasdforever.com. It is industry standard, and it does help the show, right? Because the show is free to you, not free to me, and that's okay. I'm not trying to grift. But what I am saying is that, you know, having revenue come in so that we could pay awesome people like Kevin and Yvonne, who works really hard on the show, and Jason, the guy who even uploads the blog and uploads the actual episode. So it is a team effort. There's, I think, four or five of us that work on the show. So I got to try it for a month, okay? If you hate it, it sucks. It's awful. Even though it's industry standard, let me know, because we do have Buy Me a Coffee. We were talking about that before, and people were able to help the show that way. But I don't want you guys to have to pay for everything all the time, right? You know what I'm talking about. In fact, I'll have to collaborate this stat, but I believe parents pay $20,000 more over and above other special needs parents for individuals with FASD. I get it. So having said that, we are going to have lots of hope. We're going to learn about what this organization is doing and how you can be involved. Yes, you can be involved, because you should be involved, because they need your input, like your direct lived experience, so they can make things better. So again, if you haven't heard her on the show before, Audrey McFarlane is the executive director for the Canada Fetal Alcohol Spectrum Disorder Research Network. She was one of the founders of the Lakeland Center for FASD, also another badass organization headed up by Lisa Murphy, and led this organization for about 20 years. In the past 20 years, she has been passionate about working with individuals with FASD, their families, and service system to develop best practice service models in rural diagnosis, okay? Community outreach and prevention. Audrey has presented at the local, regional, national, and international level on many issues related to FASD. As executive director of the National Research Network, she directs and encourages research in areas of FASD that is meaningful to families, individuals with FASD, policymakers, service providers, and to promote healthy pregnancy, and she makes one heck of a pancake. We'll do a post-interview debrief on the other end. All right, if I'm ready, you're ready. Let's go. Hey, everybody. Here I am with the executive director of CanFASD, Audrey McFarlane. Buddy, I think you are the first three-timer. I'll have to double-check so I'm not confabulating, but welcome back to the show. We appreciate having you.
Oh, thanks so much, Jeff. I love being on the show.
Isn't it fun?
It is fun. And it's great to be able to share with so many people. You have so many great followers. I love it.
Yeah, I appreciate you pandering right out of the box. That's good. That's some media training there. That's excellent. I pander to them all the time. You know, it's true. They are awesome. And what I like as well, you are CanFASD. The things you do still have a ripple effect around the world, and people can still use your information. So with our worldwide audience, it's still relevant, although it's CanFASD. Okay. For those poor souls who have not listened to every single episode and already know about you, one, can I just get a little bit of what is CanFASD, the quick synopsis?
Yeah, sure. So we're a national research network specifically looking at FASD, and we focus in on areas that are going to be most meaningful for people. So prevention, diagnosis, interventions, child welfare, and justice are our focus. And so we do research in those areas as we can get the funding to do so. We have lots of great ideas, and we know that there's lots of gaps out there that we hear from your families as well. But we take the research that we are able to do and then turn that into knowledgeable bits. So we try to turn it into information that's usable for government folks so that they can then develop that information into good programs and service delivery. We also turn some of the information into work that other researchers can follow, or even sometimes for caregivers as well.
So basically, you take the information and you disseminate it to different groups, to researchers, frontline workers, and caregivers and parents, correct?
That's correct.
Yeah, I think that's excellent. You know, I was doing a training, and I always show, because I use you guys and I do a disclaimer that you've paid me before, and but I love you guys. And then I show that little clip where we were at the Vancouver, and I said, okay, let's learn about CanFASD from the horse's mouth. And I saw you were like horse's mouth. And honestly, I shat my pants a little because I was like, well, that's awful. Right out of the gate. So we've come a long way, you and I for sure. Okay, so let's get into what's going on here. I know you guys just put your annual report out, which is excellent, by the way. So you can get this at canfasd.ca. And right, they have like a slide almost of popular stuff on their website. I think it comes up either first or second, which is great. This looks like a massive amount of things that you guys have done. And you being at the helm of this, your organization is quite massive. And even in the middle of a pandemic, it's growing, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, we don't have that many people, but we have great partnerships. And so we say that we're small but mighty.
Yeah. But in terms of like your management and research team, like Dr. Pai, Dr. Cook, Dr. Mella, it's like Dr. Dierman for sleep. And then of course there's Catherine and Dr. Coons and Dr. Badri. Like you have the all-star team.
We do have an all-star team. That is 100%. We have the best folks. And then they also, you know, go out and collaborate with other researchers Sure. and other service providers across the country to do so many things. We, you know, that's our main shtick, I guess, you know, is to build the relationships with people that are doing the work, that are doing the parenting, and then, you know, trying to figure out not just what the research questions are, but also to help to answer and to make life better.
So in the middle of a pandemic, you guys completed 27 published articles, 54 research projects, 13 technical reports, 5 book chapters, 53 presentations, and interview. How do you decide what is good? What are we going after? What are we going to focus our small but mighty team on? Because like you said, there's a plethora.
Yeah, so a lot of it's driven by the funding that's available. So CanFASD gets its funding mostly from the provinces and territories through a membership program, and this helps us to operate, but doesn't help us to do a lot of the big research projects. So our research teams go out and they apply for funding. So that really sometimes drives what we're able to do. We identify through our conversations, sometimes surveys about what the needs are about for people on the ground. So for example, we've heard for years now that housing is a huge issue. We did a small project in Alberta.
We will talk about that table.
Yeah.
That.
So, but anyway, so that finally we've applied now 3 or 4 times for funding to launch that program, and we just got funded for it.
Yay.
So
it took you 4 times to do that. Okay, so then why did it take 4 times? Was it them? Was it you? Did you have to switch up? I guess it's a proposal, if that's the accurate. Mm-hmm. Just correct me if any of the shit I'm saying is just not right. What was the difference? Why on the 4th time, not the first time? What did you learn?
Yeah, so each time we apply, the criteria is a little bit different. And you have to remember, we're applying against like all the other housing projects in the country as well. Yeah. So there's a lot for them to choose from. And I think that we also face, you know, just as families face stigma, our researchers also face stigma in that Good. A lot of the funding bodies don't see FASD as common disorder as it is, or the difficulties that people may face. And so we have our work to do as well in educating those funders about the importance of this work. So we're just in the process actually of looking at, so the main funding body for research in Canada is called the Canadian Institute of Health Research for us, right?
Sure.
In the social services health field. And in the last 20 years, they have funded over 900 projects for autism, for example. Mm-hmm. So how many do you think that they funded for FASD?
The housing one.
No, this is just in general, funding for research.
You're putting me on the
spot. Canada.
Okay, I'll say, is it over? Okay, can you give me a clue? Over, under 5?
It's over 5. It's actually 90. So
that's way higher. I would have. That's a good thing. Okay, so 90. but compared, that's 10 times less, though, right? If I'm doing the math, see, I'm a whiz. Okay.
Yeah, so we're going to publish about that as well as soon as we get all of the criteria and the information written. But I mean, it just goes to show that we face the stigma too. And so part of it, we try so hard. We're really smart people. I have excellent, you know, as you said, the dream team.
Yeah, we love
them. They know how to write these proposals. Yeah. They're doing an excellent job. It's about training those people that are approving those proposals, how important it is.
Understood. That does make sense. So you've been doing this a long time. Some of your staff is also who write these proposals have been doing this a long time. How do you keep motivated on the third time when you guys are up against it? How do you, because it's a lot of paperwork. It's a slog, right? If for a guy looking at, I would just be overwhelmed. How do you keep them motivated?
It's a really good question because, you know, sometimes these proposals take a year to put together and they're really huge and in depth. But you know, what keeps us going is the families and the individuals with FASD that continually reach out to us, tell us about their strengths, about their successes, and also about their challenges. That's what motivates us to do better, to keep trying to improve situations for people, to keep trying to help governments have the evidence that they need to get the programs into place.
So lots of happy feelings when it finally went through on the fourth time.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah, I love it. We are going to talk about the project. You guys have lots of cool things going on, but you did touch on a good point. Researcher stigma, because I'm not in that world. I sometimes, you know, high five with you guys when we're working together. But is that a thing? Is that a thing? Like, what is it? Discrimination? Are they not looked up at the same level? From your understanding, what kind of stuff do they deal with, the researchers?
Yeah, so I'm not 100% sure what all we're facing. You know, we've always known that we've had a great deal of difficulty getting the funding. And it's only come to light as the researchers themselves started to talk about their experiences that we started to realize that perhaps there's a bias, you know, sure. And now we're trying to figure out what our response is to that. How do we train those proposal evaluators to have a better understanding? And we try our best to include that within the proposal to express how important it is. But, you know, all the evaluators bring their own biases to the table as well, their own interests as well. So we have to find ways to build relationships with those folks so that they know us, they have a better understanding. It's the same as for everything, right? Build those relationships and try to help people to understand the importance.
Now I'm seeing more young research, like folks that are trying to get their PhDs and stuff. There's more. I've been just talking to more of those, your people, right? And Dr. Pai's people and Dr. Mella's people. So that's good. Like, that's anecdotal, seeing an increase of that, but is it difficult to keep these young researchers? Because at the end of the day, that now they have to pay off their $1 million student debt. And if there's a million jobs for autism or other things, and then it's like, not really, the pickings aren't the greatest. Do you have an issue with that? Or are you finding just some of these young researchers are seeing the opportunity in this area?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, the research teams have been really, really good at encouraging research in this field through the university programs to get master's students and PhD students to be working on a lot of these projects and with their own interests, of course, as well. And so one of the things that CanFASD has recognized is that as those of us that are getting older, there may not be a younger group coming up behind us. So really trying to encourage more researchers in this field, CanFASD has started a trainee program. And so we did a pilot of it last year with our research leads and their students that wanted to participate. And it really gives them a sense of what CanFASD is all about, but also what the needs are in the field. We connect them to the Family Advisory Committee. We connect them to individuals with FASD to hear firsthand the needs and the gaps in service and the gaps in research. And that can be really motivating for young researchers to have that firsthand experience with these folks and may really encourage them to stay in the field. Now, some of them won't, but I think a large number of them are interested. And you know what it's like once FASD kind of gets its hooks into you. You're kind of in it for life after that. So we've seen that happen to professionals over and over again. And so we're really hoping that we can do the same thing with these young researchers. And oh my gosh, Jeff, that was such a hopeful program for us that our researchers and our staff really came away from that motivated and energized just by these bright minds and how they think about things and how excited they were.
Oh, I agree. I've had several on the show.
It was so good.
Yeah, and you could just see it, how excited they are about what they're doing because they know it's having a direct impact. And even while they're going through it and what they're learning, it's all about collective wisdom for sure. Here's my last question about all of that. And I was just thinking about it, and I'm not trying to be a conspiracy guy. Is it possible that some of the stigma around your researchers is because people do know what's going on, like the numbers are coming out, do realize it possibly is 2.5 times more prevalent in autism, and 3, this is a business, and maybe you guys are encroaching on some of the funding that people have been regularly getting? Or do I got my tinfoil hat on?
Yeah, I think a little bit of that, but
I don't know. I'm just thinking about it.
No, I truly don't think that it's a conspiracy at all. I think it's just a lack of knowledge. And we see that, you know, from sometimes our teachers in our schools to the administration to the board of trustees, right? They just don't understand how common this issue is. And I think the same is true in the research field. We just have to do a better job getting to those folks, to helping them to understand the prevalence and the depth of the challenges that people are facing. So I don't think that there's any...
Like, you're not being diplomatic here. Like, you're not, because you'd tell me, right? If you thought that.
I would.
Okay, cool. And so I'll take the tinfoil hat off. Again, none of what I just said was collaborated. In fact, just debunked live. So cool. Appreciate that. Because let's talk about getting people to understand. That is a big narrative of what you guys do. And what you're saying is what we need to do, which brings me to FASD Month. My lady, what are you doing new for FASD Month that is trying to address the issue that you mentioned about getting people to understand?
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, we can't do this work alone. And so our goal here for FASD Awareness Month is to provide the tools for community groups to reach out, to share the information with their own stakeholders, with the general population. And so we hope that we've built some good tools for people to be able to use. You know, it takes an enormous amount of time to put these campaigns together for small, you know, agencies or community groups of parents and service providers. So that's our goal. And our goal is that they are, you know, following the best practices so people don't have to think about that, and that they're creative and, you know, a bit innovative perhaps as well. But one of the main things that we're trying to accomplish this year is to have consistent messaging across the country. And so we've reached out to a large number of groups to try to say, we're going to try to set some themes for the next 5 years that we would like your input on, but also for you to follow. And so that we can really start to speak with one voice in Canada. I think it really confuses decision makers when they hear even slightly different things in different communities or from even same community but different stakeholders. And so really trying to consolidate the efforts to everybody moving in one direction. So that's kind of the main thing. And then we're doing a couple of fun things as well.
Let me know the fun.
Yeah, so we've reached out to a number of monuments across the country to light up red on FASD Day. And so...
Are you breaking news? Can you break news right here?
Yes.
Do it.
Niagara Falls, the CN Tower. So there's, I think, across the country, 22 places that have agreed to light up red on FASD Day. The list, I think, is on our website. But also, if you're
community... like, I don't remember all the things, Jeff.
I know.
It's okay. So folks are from around the world. So even if we were telling them Terry Fox, oh, they might get Terry Fox, but some of them will be obscure. But the point being, that one of the fun things is 22 national monuments are going up, which is awesome. What is the other fun thing you're doing?
So we're doing, you know, we've partnered with Red Shoes Rocks. So they're a pretty fantastic group. So RJ's written a blog for us about, you know, how it all started. And we've adapted some of our social media and posters and things like that to include the Red Shoes, if that's a campaign that people are wanting to move forward on. And so we're also going to ask people to take pictures of their Red Shoes from within CanFASD, and we'll be posting those on social media and our own social media as well as CanFASD's. But if also if people want to send us your photos, that would be great. And then we're also looking for people to tell us about their strengths, because that's the main theme this year, is focusing in on, you know, people's strengths and trying to change the story a little bit. Not that we're downplaying the needs that people have, but really trying to point out that they're more than the challenges that they have. So that's one of the strengths. And so people can send us little video clips if they want, or just contact us with their story about their strengths.
It is because the focus is on strengths, because I just want to give a shout out, because this is the research from Katie and Dorothy. And if you guys want to listen to, I did a podcast all about what they found in their strengths research, go to fasdsuccess.com/podcast. There's a little search bar and it's episode 98. We'll put it here in our notes for this show as well, because that's what you do, is you learn what the research tells you and you create policies and you create programs from said research. So you learned about the strengths and changing the narrative. And so my point being, this isn't whimsical. You're just like strengths and greatness. No, this is research backed. We need to change this narrative. That's what they're telling us. And there's many strengths. Am I just... full of it.
No, that's absolutely true. No tin hat this time. Yeah, for sure. I mean, we always try to learn from the individuals themselves, but also in this case, you're right. We actually are conducting some research around strengths.
No, I love it, because wouldn't this then tie into CanFASD's national strategy?
Ah, very good segue.
Buddy, I'm getting better. So... while this is worldwide, can you, in a nutshell, what is the national strategy? Maybe people from other places that are listening to this can scoop some of the, you know, the things that you guys are doing with that.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, we are a research network, but as the only national organization that speaks about FASD, we really think it's time that the federal government show some leadership with FASD and designate a national strategy for FASD that signals to all Canadians that this is an important issue to pay attention to, that provinces and territories should be addressing this issue. So an actual national strategy would have areas that would address best practices for prevention, the interventions, and also alcohol policy kinds of things. So it would be the whole gamut of stuff. And we are starting to make progress. So
how?
Yes. So good. So CanFASD has been talking to so many federal politicians. I've spent almost all summer talking to different politicians.
Oh, like mixing it up?
Yeah.
Or like infiltrating like a meeting when you're not
invited,
just sneak up by the hors d'oeuvres, right? You know what I mean? Because you would look like you belong, Audrey, right? Like, I know this is audio, and if anybody hasn't seen Audrey, definitely got the great executive look. So I wouldn't So, but you're invited or like, oh yeah.
Well, we request meetings with them and then we share some information about FASD, you know, the stats and the need for a national strategy. And then we ask them to support that. So we've had really good luck with a group of senators who are interested in this topic.
And but a senator, Canadian senator, isn't an American senator.
No, they're not elected officials. They're appointed. They're the sober second thought is how we describe them in Canada. So they, you know, I'm learning all kinds of stuff about how
they have pull though. Like, but they have pull. So they're not elected. It's not like a senator in the U.S. Folks, we're just trying to keep it so you don't get lost.
Yeah. So
very influential group.
They can introduce bills to the House. So a bill is a document that
like legislation
goes to the Parliament House, to all the elected members of Parliament to review. Usually bills are put forward by government or by the MPs themselves.
But these are the sneaky buggers. They can introduce at least to the House. It still has to get voted and go through a process. So you're trying to mitigate maybe that going at, you know, where MP puts forward legislation.
Right. Yeah. So more than mitigate, we have actually a group of senators is going to take the bill forward to the House to make a national strategy for FASD law. And so that was going to be proposed into the House, I believe, in September. And so that's why we've been talking to so many MPs, and we want constituents to talk to their MPs about this so that when it goes through, it is approved, you know, kind of very quickly by all of the members of Parliament. Then it goes back to the Senate, who hopefully, because they introduced it, will approve it, and then it becomes law. And then it goes to the bureaucrats in government to enact. So that's kind of where we're at. Well,
More progress than when we talked last time.
Yes.
How do you tell when you're talking to a politician or an MP that they're listening and not just like staring through your soul thinking about lunch?
Well, usually by that stare, but by the questions that they ask. We give them lots of opportunity to ask us questions. And so, you know, if they have lots of questions, then they're clearly interested in what's happening. And, you know, constituents have made a lot of efforts to reach out and talk to their politicians, and that is starting to show. So when they, like, we can tell by the quality of the questions who has been approached or who knows a family or knows an individual with FASD, because they are much more informed, and so they can ask us more questions, and they're usually very supportive. We have not met one politician, regardless of the party that they belong to, that is not in support of this. So, but, you know, we do have a little kit on our website around the national strategy that people can use to go and talk to their member of parliament about this. Ooh, so if you have folks in Canada that are interested and have the time and the energy left after their busy days to reach out to an MP, that would be great.
But you can still like adapt this toolkit. And if someone wanted to talk to their local senator or representative in the United States too, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, they have their own bill going through, right?
But I'm just talking about like if a parent wants to talk like and keep planting seeds and, you know, because folks want to do more, they could still take your tool guide and just make it for their local politician.
Yeah, 100%. You know, and the main thing is to be clear what your message is. And, I know that families are so frustrated and that they sometimes get carried away with their story. And, you know, when someone's hearing your story for the first time, it sounds unbelievable.
Yeah.
And you know, I've said to families many times, you sound sometimes a little bit crazy. And so, you know, just be really
giving them little bits at a time, and or saying something and then leaving them out, because you could see people trying to process what you're saying. Yeah. No, I believe that's excellent. What a great segue is that parents are frustrated. One of the areas they're frustrated when it comes to substances and substance abuse. Now, the stats we know say that there's a high portion of our population that have substance abuse issues, for whether it's the way their brain is put together or it's a secondary because of trying to cope with things, you know, but there's no help. Now, I understand that you're doing a substance use treatment project, correct?
Yes. So let me tell you about that.
Please.
This is the number one thing that we hear when, you know, we're traveling around and we're meeting with families, the frustration that families have when their loved one with FASD is using substances and having a problem with that and needing help. And they're off, you know, the story is so common that they work so hard, they're desperate, they get them through detox. They wait, you know, the several months before they can get them into a treatment program, and then they get kicked out of treatment because they're not able to follow the rules or they're unable to understand the group dynamics. And it's so frustrating for families. So we applied to Health Canada. They have a grant program called Substance Use Addictions Program. And we were funded for 2 years to look at developing best practices to serve adults with FASD within substance use treatment programs, both in-house and outreach programs. So we mapped out all of the programs across Canada. We reached out to all of them with a survey about how they currently work with individuals with FASD, what they know about that. From that, we went to the literature to look at what are some of the best practices, what does the research tell us? And then we talked to families, lots and lots of families and lots of individuals about their experiences about going through treatment. We've now developed a best practice guide for substance use treatment programs. And the stage that it's at right now is that guide and training is being piloted by, I think, 10 programs across Canada that are looking at about implementing better practices for this population. And then while that's happening, we're also building an online course. Treatment program workers can take the course and learn about the best practices in serving this population.
That is so awesome. So good. Because it's even affect me personally in my own family, yeah. Right? Because our loved ones, you know, in this case, my sister, she wanted to get help. Like she, you know, and she went actually several times, but they just had no idea, right? Which is why you have the second floor and you know how I think about that. Have you been using in your treatment project what you've learned from the second floor recovery unit in terms of what works? Folks, if you don't know, Audrey, before she was the ED here, she was executive director at Lakeland Center for FASD, and they also had another program called the Second Floor Recovery Unit. It was for women on the spectrum or neurodiverse. Anywho, they didn't kick them out, which was great. Like that was the point. And so you have a place that was working very well. And so my point is you've incorporated some of that in this treatment project.
Yes. So there are a few programs from across Canada that we found that have knowledge about FASD and are, you know, having some successes. So we really did tap into those programs and had them on an advisory committee for us. Awesome. To review all of the materials and to provide us with their lived experience wisdom. So that was extremely helpful to that process. So
how long does the project go for? Because I would love for you just to come on and tell us or somebody to what the.
Yeah. So Dr. Amina Kapasi is the lead on the project. And so you can certainly have her come on.
We had her already. She talked about therapies, but yeah.
Yeah, so she's been leading this project for us, very talented new researcher. And so she can come on probably like we're wrapping it up right away here.
Collect the data. So like whenever they're ready, you know how that works. She can just reach out.
But I have an announcement to make.
Oh, what? This just in, Audrey, what have you learned? What can you tell us?
So CanFASD applied back to Health Canada to the same grant to extend our project for another year and a half to look at youth with FASD who are having problematic substance use and what the treatment programs for youth need to know about better serving this population. So we are able, we just got announced that we are being funded for that.
Congratulations.
Thank you. We're so excited to be able to extend because, you know, dealing with youth with problematic substance is much different than adults, right? And the programs are different. They're set up differently. They operate differently. We have that whole guardianship issue. So we're really excited to dive into that and develop, you know, similar guides for those programs.
Now you're supposed to say back to you, Jeff.
Oh, back to you, Jeff.
Okay, sorry. Excellent. That's okay. Okay, dude. But that's all well and good, okay? But the problem is we're not getting a problem. Okay, so this works. And now our individuals on the spectrum get sober, but they still need a place to live. Housing is an issue. You wouldn't happen to be also addressing housing, would you?
We would. We just...
You would or you are or like what's going on in the housing?
We are. So we were just funded a couple of months ago by Canada Mortgage and Housing Corporation. They have that housing hub that they fund various programs from across the country. We were talking about that a little earlier about how this is our fourth time applying and we finally got approved to look at housing and best practices in the housing sector for individuals with FASD. And this time we've focused our proposal around those transition years for youth who are moving into adult services. And so that will be our focus in the coming year. We've partnered, as is required by this funding, with what's called a solutions lab. So they work a little bit differently than we typically work in terms of research. So we're excited to learn from them as well as the process goes along. And we are having a bit of a webinar, a members only webinar.
Around
the housing project and what it's going to look like. But we will be reaching out to many of the housing programs across the country, similar as we did to the substance use treatment. So, yeah.
And you have to manage all this, dude? Like, how do you?
I do, yeah. But I have great people.
So, which means like you have smart people you delegate to.
That's right.
No, but okay. Then what is your job? Is it getting in front of people? Is like, okay, so delegating is important when you run an organization. I'm slowly starting to learn that so you could focus on what your mastery is. So, and what is it? Is it getting in front of people? Where is like Audrey, it's her arena. Like you're totally at home and you're like, I got this.
Well, I mean, it's a bunch of different things. So I help to figure out what funding's available, what are our priorities that we want to go after. I'm the one that's usually out front talking to politicians, but also to families and caregivers and really trying to understand what the issues are so that I can translate that. But I spend an awful lot of time on the other end sharing with policymakers what the best practices are, how they can improve their programming, what are the things that they should consider when they're rolling out new programs, so that they don't duplicate things that have already been done. So, you know, some provinces are rolling out funding for training. Well, you know, we've already evidenced that. We've already set the best practices around some of the training. So, you know, that they can save their money and focus on other things. So those are the kinds of things I spend an awful lot of time doing.
Yeah. Awesome. Yes, you do. You're very good at what you do. And I'm not just blowing smoke. Because we spent a lot of time together and now for years, and you have been doing all that. It's just so exciting to see, because maybe last year you were like, we're pushing. This is what's going on, yeah. Pandemic. And then still bang, this was your year. And this is what you guys are doing. You listen to the people. You're right. You know, you have committees, you have a parent advisory board, you have a individual on the spectrum. They've got a name. They all have got cool names, right? Their group. And so that's where you're getting feedback. It's not like you're like, this is what I think the people need. You're getting the feedback and you still want the feedback.
I look good. I mean, really good.
Hey, everyone!
Come and see how good I look.
You probably just motivated people, but they're like, this is policy. How can I help? So I know this, I believe, is this Canada only, the national survey, or is it anybody?
No, international.
Oh, okay, great. Okay. So you have an international caregiver survey. Tell us about it, because that influences what you guys do in terms of some of the substance use stuff, right? You've been led by what you've been learning.
That's right. And, you know, lots of our projects that we're either developing proposals for or writing, you know, research papers after, we're like, oh, wouldn't it be great to have the caregiver's perspective for this or for that? And it's not documented anywhere. So we thought, well, we have the resources. We can develop a survey that speaks directly to caregivers to capture their experiences. And so we really want to be able to highlight those experiences and to share them with governments to improve practice. So, for example, one of the things that we talk all the time about anecdotally, but we don't actually know, is how many grandparents are raising grandchildren or great-grandchildren. And right. But we don't actually have any numbers about that in Canada. And we don't know if their experiences are different than biological parents. So, you know, are their needs different? And so once we find out some of those kinds of things, we can share those needs with governments to say, you know, this is how many people are having this experience, like you should adapt that into your funding for children with disabilities or something like that. You know, just depends to kind of break it down concretely. But, you know, so the survey is available, it's online. It is, I will say, it is a rather intense, long survey.
It's you, what you mean by intense is it's a snack survey, which means you bring snacks to do it. See how we got to word it a little differently. It's not intense, it's snacks. You get a bowl of chips, popcorn, whatever it is, get after it, right?
Yeah, but you can't.
No, you're like, no, it's long, dude. I see you trying to make it nice. Okay, fair enough.
You can go in and out of the survey, though. Right. You don't have to do it all in one shot. And by intense, I mean that it can be quite emotional journey as well for families. And so we did try to build in some healthcare breaks into it and some ideas on personal care. So, I mean, we tried. I mean, it's not, you know, it's really difficult to help families through these surveys, but oh my gosh, it is so important. And we have, I think, 100 families that have started the survey and about 50 that have completed it. We need a few more to make it statistically relevant.
Yeah, so like the data, it's like a good snapshot, right? How many do you need to say, okay, this is a good snapshot?
Yeah, I'm not sure. It'll depend on the topic, but 100 completed surveys would be phenomenal. We would then have something really valuable then to take forward to governments. But we're going to leave the survey open. So, you know, lots of surveys have a hard end date. But this survey we've decided to leave open so that we can see if there's changes over time. So those families that are inputting their experiences about the past or today, you know, are the experiences of parents tomorrow going to be better or different? And so that we can also kind of share that information over time.
So good. And then if people really want to get involved, they really want the inside scoop and they want to be able to share their stories and connect with other researchers and stay informed on all the newest stuff and perhaps even influence research, like you were saying, they would join your membership. Is that correct?
That's right. So as I said, we do have provincial and territorial memberships, but we also have individual person memberships that people can buy. So I think for caregivers, it's $49 a year. And that gives you kind of the inside track to new research, new opportunities that's coming up. You get a regular newsletter telling you all the things that are happening. So you don't have to seek out that information.
That's the point. What's new? That's why I love you guys. When something's new, you'll let me know. so we don't have to search for it. And yeah, no, I 100% agree with you. And it's just a chance for people who are members to say, hey, I have an idea, or, you know, I like this, like give direct feedback. They're essentially like a part of the team, right?
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, we really value that. And that, you know, truthfully, that income helps to keep us going as an organization. We don't get, you know, consistent funding, as we talked about how difficult it is to get those research grants. And lots of times those research grants have to be held by university. So CAN-FASD doesn't even get the funding. So, you know, we need those operational dollars for us to keep pumping ahead with what the new research needs are, and then to help get that information out to folks.
You've been busy.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. You've done a lot, but my question is like, what is like a want that's a little bit in that distance? Like, yeah, I would love to do this, but you haven't grabbed it yet.
Yeah. So some of the things that are heating up on the kind of the,
yeah, yeah. Give me like the juicy, like the, it's just us two, right? So the behind the, what's going on? Like, what, it might not come to fruition, but it's always good to hear of like what we want, or, you know, in our dream world, or what we're working on.
Yeah. So I've been involved in some conversations about, you know, alcohol labeling beverage containers, about the risks of pregnancy and alcohol. And so that's an area that's really important. It, you know, I think you had Louise Gray on before.
From Australia. Yeah.
Yeah. No, FASD, as they call it, yeah, in Australia. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so, you know, they've done a great job pushing forward with labeling in that country. And so the whole conversation about labeling on alcohol containers for other risks like cancer and heart disease have really pushed forward. So I've gotten myself on some of those panels to talk about alcohol and pregnancy. So that's one of the things. I mean, it's not probably very exciting for some of your families, no, but
I wasn't asking that. I was asking like for you. What do you?
Yeah. Yeah. So that's one of the things. I mean, we're really trying to push ahead to have this national strategy. You know, getting a bill passed is just one thing. Getting government to then fund it you know, it's just the beginning steps.
That's
really on the horizon for me, is really pushing forward those policy kinds of things.
Would you say, is there more traction this time than last year?
Yes, absolutely. Much more awareness. You know, all of these Zoom conversations that I've had with politicians over the last year have really started to pay off in terms of their knowledge. Yeah, I think that's really great. And then I think the third area that's on the horizon, it's on the cusp of happening, is screening. Every industry, you know, in healthcare and social services is asking us, how do we screen for folks who may
asked you guys. I remember a direct email to you. Right. That, but it doesn't mean like it's not your fault, dude. It's just, I'm saying I'm validating. You're right. It's so needed, right?
It just takes an incredibly long time to develop these and test these and standardize these tools.
Yeah, yeah.
But we are pushing ahead. We are working towards that. There's also international talks about this. So that is on the cusp. I really feel like we should see something more effective coming through.
That makes sense. This was awesome. You're always doing so much.
Well, we're trying to stay ahead and, you know, to know what people need, but you know, I know that your audience too has done some, you know, your caregiver groups have done some really great work with some of our researchers too. And they're, you know, that's so valuable to have that network available to us. So happy.
Oh, I love our partnership, relationship, whatever you want to call it. I just think my people love to do it. You know, there's some stuff that we're working on too with Dr. Pi. And yeah, I love being a part of that too. It just works, because we can't do it on our own, right?
True.
Right. We just can't. And so let's make the best interventions that are led by research. And at the same time, if I can share what you guys are doing so my audience can take action, because there's nothing more empowering feeling that A, people are listening, and B, you know, I could take action and my voice is heard. And that's why I love having you come on here, because, you do listen. Like, you're listening. There's been research that has been influenced by, you know, even Dr. Mello is saying research was influenced by a conversation he had with my online group, you know, my coaching program. So it does. And I'm excited. So I'm always here to share what you guys are doing because I think it directly impacts my families. And so honestly, keep up the good work, buddy.
Yes.
Don't go retiring on me now is kind of what I'm trying to tell you.
Not for a little while.
Okay, good. Thanks. See, if there's one benefit to the stock market, it's Audrey's retirement plan. So she's got to stay in the game a bit longer. So we win. Before I go, is there anything else that I didn't talk about, buddy?
Just on the prevention side, yeah. We didn't spend too much time talking about
that's
that.
That's the point. Let her rip.
Yes. But, you know, we just released a set of videos that feature 14 international researchers talking about their prevention work in FASD. And they're all on our website under the prevention tab. And they are amazing. They speak directly to people about the work that they're doing from 14 researchers from 5 different countries. And I just find that so interesting and so grateful to Dr. Nancy Poole and her team for pulling those together. And we hope to be able to add new researchers and new countries as we go along.
So good. Okay. So where is that? So I'm on the website. So where do I go?
Yeah. So if you go under prevention on the side, there's a tab that says prevention.
Yes.
And then
if you know your website better than me, BS. Yeah. Dude, it's on the front page.
Yeah.
It says prevention.
And then if you hit the tab international series, they should all pop up.
Buddy, we're going to put this exact link. I'm going to take care of it. Guys, if you go to fasdsuccess.com/podcast and you click on Audrey's on this episode, if you scan to the bottom, we'll have all of these links that she talked about. Yeah, there's just so much going on. Are you going to come back and do this again and update us some more?
Of course.
I think it needs to be like an annual thing, right?
Yes, I think so. And it's great timing right before FASD month. So
yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. And we love the work that you're doing. So keep it up, buddy. And thanks for doing this.
Thank you.
My dudes, I am not kidding. That's how cool Audrey McFarlane is. I'm just so lucky I get to work with them. And we work well together, which I just love talking to her. Even though that was a podcast interview, sometimes that's like how our conversations go. And she just gives invaluable insight into the industry as a whole and what's going on because she sees it at such a high level. But then she's built this absolute juggernaut of a team with Dr. Pai, Dr. Mella. I'm going to forget people, right? So I should have just not said any names. But like there's this Dr. Katie Flanagan. She spells her name K-A-T-Y, and it's messed me up for 6 years because I think it's Kathy. Anywho, long story short, there's so many incredible opportunities for you. For example, the caregiver survey, that's going to lead the direction they go into when looking for research opportunities. They're not doing research that does not affect you. Everything from, you know, Dr. Pai's Towards Healthy Outcomes to Dr. Mella's medication algorithm, you name it. They've done a strength study. Like, it goes on and on and on. That's how much ass they kick. So you can get involved in the study. If you want to be like an insider and also help them, they're a non-for-profit, but also the value, you could become a part of their membership and you will, like me, because I have one, they send you the stuff, right? This is what we're working on. This is what's new. This is how you can participate. Now, I know folks can't do all of those things because you're like, dude, I can barely like put on day-old jogging pants and throw my hair in a ponytail. I got you, boo. I got you. I get that. So don't feel bad if right now you're just surviving the moments, because that's cool too. And that's very important work. And just because it says the Canada FASD Research Network, I believe they are as international as anybody could do and could be. But it's cool to hear that they are going to have 22 places across Canada lit up in some major monuments, especially like Niagara Falls, Red Shoes Rocks, RJ, also Jody Culp. Everybody in that organization too has really got her own thing. And it's thanks to them. And I love how their theme this year is strengths, right? Trying to change the story that we are not trying to downplay challenges. So the theme is strength. Just like the theme should be strength with your guys. What are they good at? What do they like to do? I'll always bring it back to, I don't know what number of podcasts, but I interviewed a cool lady. Her name is Tracy Mastrangelo, and she is out in Alberta, Canada, and she talks to schools, and she mentioned an author. I really have to figure out this dude's name because I'm trying to source, and it's pretty vague. It resonated with me when she talked about strengths and weaknesses, and I'll reiterate with you, and the message was that just because you're good at something doesn't necessarily strengthen you. Right. So looking at strength as something that strengthens, something that you like to do. Oftentimes we like to do things that we are good at. The same goes with weaknesses. You could be good at something, but it weakens you to do it. There are things that I just don't like to do, and it has nothing to do with my brain. It has everything to do with who I am as a human being. And we cannot lose sight of that. We cannot lose sight that you're children are human beings with their own personality and their own wants, needs, and desires. The unfortunate thing is the tools that they were given aren't as well put together in certain areas as ours is, even though they look normal and talk normal. You are a human being, and you have your own wants and needs, and it can't just be giving your emotional chips all day, every day to a job that is just so hard. You can't sustain that. So what strengthens you? What weakens you? Do more of the stuff that strengthens you. Do more of the stuff that strengthens your children, because I guarantee you, if you're worried about these skills or when they get older, just worry about making a good human being, because a good human being with good mental health will have the confidence to try and attempt to learn these skills. But if we don't build a relationship first, if we don't make them feel competent and that they can, then all the skill building in the world is not going to matter if you don't believe it. Same thing with you. If you are dealing with some caregiver fatigue, compassion fatigue, that's doing a hard job for a long time with seeing no end in sight, no reprieve. That's not good. That's not good for your physical. That's not good for your mental health. That is why you need to do things that strengthen you. You just have to allow that into your life, that that's possible. And then you just keep searching for the way. Because if you're like, no way, I got 7-8 kids. Or no way, I got 2 kids. No way, I have 1 kid that's really hard and really high needs and just needs lots of help. Listen, man, you are first. You are what matters most. It might be a hot take for some, but you matter. Why? Because if there is no you, there is no them. And if there is no you that is functioning well, there is no them that is functioning well. There is no individual on the spectrum that are successful without people behind them, functional people behind them. So keep grinding, keep doing it. As you know, this is my favorite season. This is my favorite season. Why? We're starting back to school, and you might say, oh, that's awful. But trainings are coming up. Things are happening. There are conferences. FASD Day, y'all. FASD Day. We're going to be releasing a video, and I'm going to be doing a private keynote for an organization. So that's what my FASD Day is. What's your FASD Day look like? Let me know in the comments below. Let me know. What are you guys doing? Because if you want to let me know and or share what you're doing, jeff@fasdforever.com, if you want to share that, then we could post it. We could put a big group of posts together and let everybody know what they're doing. Yeah, I just thought about on the spot. But you know what I don't need to think about on the spot is how important you are and how much of a good parent you are. Even though it might seem like you take a step forward and there's 20 steps back, the fact that you're listening to this, to the end here, means just how bad you want it. And you have to keep going. You have to. But you don't have to do it alone. That's things like joining our Facebook group, facebook.com/group/FASD forever. Join a Facebook group. That's listening to the podcast. That's taking trainings. That's getting into the mix, because somebody's going to say something that's going to make you go aha and have a major cultural, mental, and paradigmal shift. I sound like freaking Don King. All right. Keep it up. Keep it up. I love you, and we need you strong, and we need you good. So any questions, you just hit me up. I love your face. Till then, I'll see you next week. We got another good one. It's about school. All right. Talk to you soon. Bye.